Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals to talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, he's back, Dr. Travis Yates, retired major from the Tulsa Police Department. And not that I'm keeping track, 2 years, 3 months since he retired. But anyhow, thanks for being back on the show, Doctor. We appreciate it. I think I'm right. Is that about right? It's close. July of 2 years ago,
two and a half.
And then we got Scott Steyert, and he's our resident. He's our resident badass. I think I can say that and get away with it on radio. So he just, Green Beret, Delta Force, these little, little known, secret little, I call them the hut men. It's like hut men. We'll talk about that later. But anyhow, he provides a very unique perspective on the show. And Scott, you see, I held over those two stories that you asked me to hold over. Scott's going to be all over this stuff, guy. He can do this in his sleep. So thanks for being on the show, gentlemen. And he's also with Aero Precision USA. That's his company. So let's go to our sponsors. We've got our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com, also Compliant Technologies. They are our satellite sponsor. So thanks to them for getting us on satellite radio. Also, AeroPrecisionUSA.com, Scott's company. And they've got some great arm stuff. GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, our streaming sponsor. Thanks to them, we're streaming to over a million people right now on our live show. TwoBells.com, they built a new online store at Leo Roundtable, and FisherOrlandoBass.com. And that's where Zach comes in. And Zach is your new best friend, because he has not only a bass fishing charter based out of Orlando, but he's got the Florida alligator hunting, where you catch and relocate alligators. So when your family's going to Disney, drop them off, give them the credit card, and head over to Zach and do the bass fishing charter or the alligator hunting. Also, a shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com, Ray Dietrich at FormerLawman.com, and Travis Yates, yes, our very own Dr. Travis Yates with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all these guys for helping make the show happen. And now, what in the world are we going to be talking about today? Guys, we've got some interesting stuff. Our first one, we're talking about it again. Ex-cop seeks retrial after conviction in the Sonya Massey murder case. This is the one where the black female... And look, I say black female because it has a bearing on the story. Black female, a pot of boiling water on the stove, goes to throw it at least one of the officers, and she gets shot and killed by the officer. This officer's been convicted of murder, and so asking for a retrial. We're going to go into that. Also, we've got a couple stories with video components right off the bat. We got Indianapolis police officers shoot an unarmed wanted man while trying to take him into custody. Crazy. If you watch the video, why I'm curious, do you guys think, would you have thought this guy was armed? And that's a legitimate question. Then deputies ruled justified in the fatal shooting with a murder suspect who took a woman hostage. Scott's gonna be all over that one. And then we've got a couple update articles if we have time to get to them. Florida and Tennessee senators, they push a 5-year prison term for doxing federal agents. And then we got another one back to back. Florida, Missouri senators, they moved the double penalties for attacks on ICE agents as assaults are spiking. And so Ashley Moody, our senator in Florida, she's all over both of these. Then we got El Centro police officers fatally shoot a suspect in a stolen car when he drives towards officers. And we've also got, that's the second one that Scott wanted us to hold for him. And then man fatally shot by Seattle police officers when he points a gun at officers. So that's the last story. And guys, we will go with these as we have time to permit. I'm going to go ahead and mute Scott's microphone, and let's go ahead and go to the first story then. So our first one here at ChicagoSunTimes.com, ex-cop seeks retrial after conviction in the Sonya Massey murder case. You guys remember, I've talked a lot about this because when I worked the projects, this is a cultural thing with the black community. So lawyers for a former downstate cop convicted of murdering an unarmed black woman. And so that's the first liberal flag, because she was not unarmed. She was armed. So we'll get that in a second. In her Springfield area home last year, they're seeking a new trial, alleging that errors by the judge swung the case against their client. Now, a jury in Peoria, they convicted this officer, Sean Grayson. He's 31 years old, of one count of second-degree murder after he fatally shot Shonda Massey, who was 36 years old. He shot her in the face while responding to a 911 call about a potential prowler outside the home. And they went inside the home to talk to her. Now, in their first public response to the verdict, Grayson, our cop's lawyers, argue that Sangamon County Circuit Judge Ryan Kedigan, he erred when he allowed the jury to hear disparaging remarks. The then Sargon County deputy. And so he was a deputy, not a police officer, worked for the sheriff's office. But he made some comments after he shot Macy that they think influenced the jury wrongly. So in the body cam, on the body cam footage that night, the deputy can be heard discouraging his partner from administering first aid to Macy after she was shot in the face, saying that, hey, it's a headshot, dude. She's done. And later, when Deputy Grayson's telling other officers what had happened, he can be heard calling her the B word and saying that she was effing crazy. Now, defense attorneys Daniel Fultz and Mark Wyckoff, they say playing these moments from the body camera footage in the court, quote, improperly inflamed the passions of the jury, which is substantially prejudicial to the defendant, unquote. And also they go on to say that the events occurring after the officer's decision to use force have no bearing on whether that use of force was reasonable or whether it was justified. And what matters is the events that lead up to the use of force and the moment the force was used. Now, the attorneys go on to argue the court should have allowed Grayson, the cop, to present evidence of Macy's propensity for violence. And in their filing, they described an incident that allegedly occurred 24 hours before the shooting, when a neighbor called police and said that Macy, the same female that was shot and killed, had hit her with a brick. The judge denied admitting that detail during the trial, saying that it was not reliable. The defense team said that the evidence could have swung the verdict in the defendant's favor. And prosecutors sought to convict Deputy Grayson, who is white, on 3 counts of first-degree murder. Wow. But 9 women and 3 men in the jury opted instead to convict him of a lesser charge of second-degree murder. So that's the way this thing goes down. The last note is that the sentencing hearing, which hasn't even happened yet, that's going to happen in January on the 29th, so at the end of January, and he could face up to 20 years in prison. So there you go. So commentary on this, Dr. Travis Yates, take it.
Yeah, you know, I think I need to caution everyone that there's a lot of emotion just from the media and then what you just read, Chip. There's so much there that doesn't matter, and there's so much there that does matter that the jury never heard. First off, her being black has nothing to do with it. Him being white has nothing to do with it. She's not unarmed, as you already said. So the stories are written in a way to solicit a certain emotion. If you take the facts of this case, the officer can clearly judge reasonableness based on a totality of circumstances based on all the information that he has at the time of the shooting. What was said afterwards, what was done afterwards, that she's this or that, none of that matters. The fact that she's mentally ill, none of that matters. So clearly, the officer understanding she has a history of violence goes into that. Of course, the judge doesn't let it happen. There's a bunch of other things that the article doesn't mention that the judge precluded, because to convict a cop of murder based on totality circumstances, you've got to be able to leave a lot of totality out to get that conviction. First off, boiling water is a deadly weapon. That's a fact people need to understand. People have died from that. And secondly, all the information he knows, because he knows very little at the time he has to make that awful, tragic decision. So this is what's happening around American law enforcement. I serve an expert in various cases. I have various cases going right now. There are cops being arrested and charged and even sometimes convicted, and they have to kind of manipulate the facts of the jury. For instance, one case that I'm aware of, they're prohibiting the expert from talking about Graham B. Connor. They're prohibiting the witness from talking about totality of circumstances, and they're making the expert stay in the grounds of a sort of a stand your ground law where the officer has a duty to retreat, which has nothing to do with what law enforcement does. So they're trying to apply a lot of these things that the officer doesn't. You have to look at the officer's policy. You have to look at what they know at the time. You have to look at case law, which is Graham B. Connor, and you have to judge it based on that. All the other stuff doesn't matter. But to get convictions, they have to eliminate that and include a bunch of stuff that doesn't matter. So this is tragic. There's been some real cowardly leaders and cowardly in law enforcement that want to just blast the officer with this because they know a lot of information now. Well, I'll have to throw some boiling water on them next time they encounter somebody. Let's just see how they react. Yeah, I do need to. We have a very difficult time getting rid of emotion in these cases, but you have to, because that doesn't come into play at the moment this decision is made. You can get all emotional afterwards, but you can't let it become the decision. So it's very unfortunate. I don't know why anybody would be a cop in Illinois, more or less this county, but there's a bunch of pockets in the country where I don't know how you could do the job understanding that. I don't know how it's happening, how they're even getting people to do the job. So it's very unfortunate.
So when I started off, I said that it mattered that she was black. Travis just said that it didn't matter. So let me explain the difference, because we're talking about a couple different things. Number one, just to make it clear to the audience, you do not have to be in fear of death. Great bodily injury does the trick. the black thing that I was referring to, it's a cultural thing, because going, you know, working in the hood and the projects in the black community, look, guys, this is back in the 80s. And I'm talking about the early the mid 80s. And it's been going on a lot longer than that. When you have an upset, a mad, an angry black woman, and she thinks, for an example, that her, the guy she's seeing has been messing around on her, or maybe they're married, dude, this is the go-to. This is something I've seen. It normally is potash, which will permanently scar, disfigure, you know, a black person by making the pigmentation in their skin white. But I've seen it done with boiling a pot of water too. And I've got one case that I'll tell you about. I would have shot her too. Stick with us. Commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. And you know, as police officers, we all know we can get our gear from a lot of different places. When you throw the online mix, the choices are almost limitless, right? But I want to remind everybody here about what's really important, and it's about supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know if a company does that better than Gauls at Gauls.com. And listen to this. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which of course they do in spectacular fashion. Not only that, they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please support our title sponsor by going to Gauls at Gauls.com. And they're going to do you one better. For the loyal listeners of the show, they've got a code that'll get you 15% off your next purchase. It's Radio15. So type in Radio15 in order to get 15% off your next purchase at Gauls.com. And they have gift cards. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Gauls gift card, and they'll be your new best friends. In fact, we're going to give away one today. So that is Gauls at Gauls.com. So make sure you check it out. And if you want to get a gift card on this show, make sure you watch on the stream in order to be able to enter. All right, guys, now we're going to be able to talk about Comply Technologies at ComplyTechnologies.com. And, you know, they're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, law-abiding manner, utilizing their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Their flagship product, we all know by now, is called the Glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And yes, you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The Glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplyTechnologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Comply Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. So go to ComplyTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that is ComplyTechnologies.com. And make sure you watch those cool videos. You'll be glad you did. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the Law Enforcement Talk Show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Travis Shades, retired major from Tulsa, and also Scott Steyard with AeroPrecisionUSA.com and a pretty impressive Special Forces background. We're talking about Sonya Massey, you know, the black female that was killed. She had a pot of boiling water that she was in the process of throwing at an officer. So I mentioned before the commercial break that I'd had a lot of calls involving this, and that it's a cultural thing with the black community, which it is. But I realize that a lot of people may not be aware of that, whatever department they worked at, or maybe it just wasn't a cultural thing that they were aware of. When I watched the video for the first time and I saw what Massey was doing, it immediately, I immediately knew, and I knew what damage it could do. So my first encounter was just simply a black female. She wasn't married to the guy, but it was her boyfriend. And she thought he'd been cheating on her. So she waited till he went to sleep. And maybe you guys have heard the story before, but she super glued his eyelids shut while he's sleeping. He was totally unaware of that. Then she goes to the stove and gets the pot of boiling water, pours it all over his face. So I get the call. I get there. And this guy, there's blood everywhere. He had forced his eyes open. They were super glued. So he couldn't see what was going on. He couldn't defend himself. And she's just throwing pot of boiling water all over him. And he finally got his eyes open forcibly, and that's where the blood was coming from. And just the skin was just melting off his body. It was just, the only advantage was it wasn't potash, which would have immediately turned everything white permanently. But even going to the projects and working in the hood and seeing guys walking around with white arms or white necks or white from potash that had been thrown on them, the scarring and disfigurement, that is a qualification for using deadly force. Even if you're not in fear of maybe dying from it, you could go blind. There's all kinds of serious issues. I've seen it. I've seen the potash dump, but this was the boiling water thing. It doesn't matter, but a lot of people aren't necessarily aware of the damage that it can do. This officer apparently was. And the other thing is that the video that we were watching, Travis, the video from the partner, it's very difficult to find. I had to hunt for it last time, but I found the video from the partner. And that's the one that actually shows the chick coming up from behind the counter of the kitchen. She disappears behind the counter when the officer, when the one officer draws down on her, when the closest officer goes to see where she's at, because it's like, turn your back and like, try to get to the front door. She could be going for, they don't know what she's going for a gun or a knife and shoot you in the back. So he goes to see what's going on, and she jumps up with a pot of water, and she's in the throwing motion when the officer shoots her in the face. Completely justified, no doubt in my mind, as long as the officer was in fear, which, you know, which we know he was. So, but there's a lot of people that aren't familiar enough with this, or that it's a cultural thing handed down from, you know, from black mother to black daughter, the black daughter. And it just, I've seen it. It's real. There's no denying it. So now that's what bothers me. This guy being convicted for second degree murder. I hope he gets, he shouldn't be tried. He should get cleared and not have to go through the trial again. But of course, Travis brought up a good point about where he works at and the different standard across the country. So,
well, it is really horrific, but I will tell you this, the judge is a hypocrite. Because let me just put you in the judge's seat that would not let any information in the officer knew at the time, which was she had just had allegedly done a violent act just 24 hours earlier with a brick, another deadly weapon. Let's say the judge has to call a plumber, but he's about to go to work. So he calls a plumber. He's going to leave his wife at home, and he knows the plumber had just committed a violent act 24 hours later. But he chooses, because he's going to use his own standard, to not tell his wife about the plumber's criminal back. So it's just ludicrous they're doing this to law enforcement. The standards that everybody has common sense about, if you're law enforcement, you've got to be superhuman. You don't need those same standards.
And good point. And the other thing is that, you know, talking about, you know, making a comment about, you know, maybe, hey, look, it's a head. It means a head. It's a face shot. It's a head wound. Scott knows this better than me, but there are, look, you, When you're a cop and you've just been around so much death, and different agencies have different experience levels with trauma or the amount of people that die around you. I get that, but when you've seen it enough and seen it a lot, you just know. You can look at the injury, dude. You're working on people and you're doing chest compressions, and the more holes, the more they've been shot, it's just more fluid exiting the body and killing them quicker, you know, when you're working on these people. So I know there's optics and you want to do, but I can see this guy saying, I can see myself saying, if it was a head wound and some dude going up to save her, I'm being, dude, she's done. You know,
we're expecting police officers to be superhuman. Let's have someone try to, you know, kill you, and you have to use deadly force. Your heart rate's going 190 beats a minute, and you're supposed to be Mother Teresa immediately afterwards. It's just so ridiculous.
Mm. And Scott, with what you've seen, would you, what would your assessment be when like a headshot or someone's been severely, are you guys going to say
that right there is when I heard that, the first thing I thought of was like, man, I'm glad people didn't record us. I mean, you just say you become so calloused.
Wow, you desensitized. It doesn't really.
I mean, it's like you're callous to what you see. You know, it's like it's and the cops. I know cops are the same way. I've been around cops a lot. You guys see horrific stuff, and it's like it's almost a self-preservation type of thing, right? You can either let it affect you so much that you get PTSD and it affects you, your job and your personal life, or you find a way to deal with it. Sometimes, you know, it could be humor. I know it sounds sick. I mean, it sounds weird, but sometimes just, and you know, I've said things where I wasn't like, you know, gloating on it or anything, but it you know, could have come off as sounding sick and twisted and all that. But really it was just my way of dealing with it. And I've seen it done a lot of times. So what he says and all that, I don't really put a whole lot to that. Now, I'm going to kind of buck the system here. Let me start off by saying I believe that this officer had every right to take that shot. And a headshot, it doesn't matter. If you're going to shoot somebody, whether it's a head, chest, it doesn't matter. And you're shooting to eliminate the threat in the story, doesn't matter. But I mean, I probably in that situation, I probably wouldn't have shot. I would have, I mean, just given the situation, I would have been like, if I saw the point, I would have tried. Now, if it got to a point where, you know, she's picking it up and she's coming at me, like, you know, and I'm like, hey, okay. Then I was,
well, she was in, and I don't know, and she was in full swing, dude. She was, when he looked over the counter, she was standing up with the pot of boiling water in her hand and was coming at him. I mean, it was in motion.
Scott, I mean, Scott is perfectly correct in saying that. I mean, the standard for use of force isn't that everybody would do the same thing, right? That's not the standard. True, so it's perfect. Right. It's perfectly fine to say, I probably wouldn't have done that, but it's legal for them to do that.
Yeah, I do think it's 100% legal. Like, I mean,
commercial break, guys. We'll be right back. All right, guys, introducing Aero Defense by Aero Precision at AeroPrecisionUSA.com, a beacon of durability, dependability, and all-American craftsmanship in the realm of duty rifles. And yes, we're talking about long guns. They're born from an aerospace engineering company, so you know these guys know what they're doing. And Aero Defense by Aero Precision demands perfection, because settling for anything less is not an option when your life is on the line. Visit AeroPrecisionUSA.com for a lineup that matches every discipline, because they basically have something for everybody. And you know, back since 1994, they've been quietly leading the AR builder parts domain, but now they're making waves in the complete rifle arena with Solus bolt actions. And that's not all. They're M4, E1 Pro, and Mod 4 handguards. They hit the market last year at AeroPrecisionUSA.com. The embodiments of duty rifle excellence now being tailored for the civilian customer, which means that now you guys can start getting your hands on some of this primo stuff. And their M5 AR 308 platform, nothing short of spectacular. So don't settle for less when you can have the best. Head over to AeroPrecisionUSA.com. Again, AeroPrecisionUSA.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Travis Yates, retired Tulsa police major, and also Scott Steyer, our special forces background guy. So thanks, guys, for being on the show. We've been talking about Sonya Macy, the female with the black pot of water that was in the process of throwing it on an officer when he ended up shooting her in the face. And that officer's been convicted for second degree murder, and he's seeking a new trial. So we'll continue to follow that and watch that. If there's no final words on that, we'll move on to the next one here. We've got some stories with video components. I know the first one is a very recent one, and then the next two are going to be ones that Scott's been waiting for. So this first one, Rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. So we have the Indianapolis Metro police officers. They end up shooting a unarmed wanted guy while trying to take him into custody.
Walk to me. Keep walking. Listen to our command. You're about to be tased, man. Walk to us now.
That's what I'm doing.
Keep walking. Walk to the sound of my voice now, man.
Come here.
You keep on messing around. Keep walking.
What do you want me to do,
Jones,
man?
Jones, hold on.
Shit.
Walk towards me.
No, what is going on, man?
Walk towards
What's
me.
Going on?
You're going to go in handcuffs. Walk towards
Why?
Me.
Why? What did I do?
Cartonio, you have warrants, okay? That's what this is about. Turn around.
Man, I'm not doing nothing.
Hey, motherfucker, you're about to be tased.
Stay there.
Get down now. Get down now.
Keep your hands where I can see them, or you're going to get shot. I will not give you another warning. You pull him.
Get him.
Keep your hands where I can see him, or you're gonna get shot. Now, I will not give you another warning. You pull him.
This was pretty convincing. I would have sworn this guy had a weapon. So Indianapolis police, they're investigating that after officers shoot and injure a guy. I can't believe they didn't kill him while trying to take him into custody. Indianapolis Metro police officers are called just before 6 o'clock p.m. on Thursday for an active investigation into a wanted guy. It's in a residential area. And according to the department, officers are searching for a suspect that's wanted for unlawful possession of a firearm by a violent felon. So he's a prohibited person. It also says he's wanted for robbery and questioning by child abuse detectives. So what does that tell you? He's a multi-purpose offender, right? Officers arrive and they surround a garage with the guy inside. And they give him loud verbal commands for him to peacefully surrender. So he walks out in the yard and he's cooperating semi with the officers. He's taking his time, but he's got to go through a gate, walk out of the fence and approach the officers. You've got really three officers, initially a male officer giving commands with a female with less lethal beside him. And then you've got another male officer, I believe, and he's walking towards him, but he's very inquisitive about, you know, what is this about? He obviously knows he's just trying to delay and wants to plan what he wants to do. Officers say that he pauses when he gets them. And there's a brief conversation. What they don't say is that you finally have an officer telling them, you know, we have a warrant for your arrest. Now, and that's worthy of debate, because most of the time, in my opinion, I think most of our opinions dealing with bad guys, you're always at the advantage of not say, hey, I got to put the handcuffs on you for your protection, or make up a story. You know, your neighbor says you're throwing trash in his yard. I just got to put the handcuffs on. We got to sort this out, you know, but they gave it up. They tell him why they really want him. And then it goes south. He puts his hand in his waistband. He tries to run away. So we got one officer using the taser or the stun gun, and another one fires a gunshot. He runs a short distance. He falls down on the ground. They're giving him more verbal commands. What he starts to do, his name is Cartonio McBride. He's 36 years old. He starts to flop around on the ground in the grass, and he's reaching for his waistband again. And now we have, they light him up. In total, we have three officers firing their weapons. The suspect gets medical aid from the officers, transported to the hospital in serious condition, and that's all they say. It doesn't say that he died, so as far as I know, he's still alive, but he did not have a weapon. They didn't locate a weapon anywhere on him or in the surrounding area, no weapon. So that's the way this thing goes down. Commentary, gentlemen, I'm curious what you guys think. And Travis, you can start us off first if you want.
Well, as you know, Chip, I'm somewhat obsessed with the pre-attack indicator cues that occur before shootings. It's the only way we can save officers' lives, because if you wait till you see a gun pointed, you never catch up, as Scott knows. Action versus reaction, you never catch up to action. So I have studied extensively the actual actions that occur before, because if you know anything about the brain, your body starts to move before you even make the decision. So there's a lot we can tell through behavior cues. I've taught a class on that called Seconds for Survival for the last 15 years. So I know a lot about this, not a lot about this. I also have reviewed over 500 videos looking at exactly what these indicators and cues are. And this guy pinged every single one of them. First off, tactically, get your taser out of the way. You don't need your taser. This guy is wanted for gun possession. He's a wanted felon. Taser is less lethal. A gun is lethal. Taser's just getting in the way. As you can tell, if you watch that video, that officer didn't know what she was doing with that taser. She was completely out of her mind. Get the taser out of the way. He's doing it all, right? What information do they know? Potentially has a gun from what he's wanted for. He's arguing. He puts his hands up. He puts his arms down. He flees. He's hands to the pocket. It's just over and over again. As Scott knows, in the military, we talk about the rule of three a lot. And that's what we talk about in behavior cues. Hey, man, when you see three, quit waiting. You got to make a decision. And this guy just pinged off like crazy. And so did he have a weapon? Yeah, we know that now. But if officers are there at the time, you are 99.9% to 100%. He's got a gun. But based on all the information they're observing and all the information they know, which is why it's a tragedy in that previous case we talked about, that information wasn't let in court. And so I am sure in Indianapolis, knowing the politics, that this is somehow some controversial shooting, we got to get past that. There's nothing controversial about this. Any human being that would have watched that would have thought he had a gun. And so if you don't want to get shot by the police, don't act like that, because he's acting like that because he's trying to portray that he has a gun. There's no other reason why you would do that. And so it's unfortunate he doesn't have a gun, but it doesn't change the fact that this was about as legal gets.
Wow. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Like as I was watching, I was like, it's almost like he's thinking how he, like, let's just say, like, I would think, okay, he probably has a gun based on his history. So he's just kind of stalling. And I know when people do act like that, they're trying to either one, get up the courage, or two, figure out when they're going to do it, right? And they're just kind of playing around. And I think this also goes into, like, there's this bravado. It's like, dude, like, why are you doing this? Like, and I think this goes into, like, it's the way the media portrays the police officers. It's like, you know, defund them. It's everything. It's like cops are the bad guys, and they have such disdain. It's like, it's almost like he's trying to, like, I'm not giving up to the cops. Like, I don't know what his thought process, but all of it's like, just go to jail, talk to him. Right. And then all this could have been avoided. And there's a long history of seeing things like this happen all the time. And it's just, I think it's a cultural thing. I think it's just the way the media portrays the police officers. And I wish that we would do a better job in the media, like saying, hey, when the cops are pulling it, just put your hands up, comply, and then it all work out. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, there's a number of these incidents, Scott, and I can't get in their heads other than, yeah, they've been inundated by the media that as long as I'm unarmed, I can do whatever I want. And if they hurt me, I could win the lottery. I don't know what's going on there, but if our leaders would simply say, listen, you can't do this. You know, you've got to just comply. You can argue later. You can go to IA. You can get a lawyer. But on the streets, you cannot do this because the Supreme Court's been clear. This is a legal, justified shooting. I don't care what politics say, what the media says. Now, who knows what a prosecutor is going to do? We don't. But I'm telling you right now, that's what Graham v. Connor exists for. This is as legal gets if you're going to act in that sort of behavior. And the fact that after the fact we know he doesn't have it, that doesn't matter. Graham v. Connor is clear. What you know after the fact doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys. Great coverage and backing up another officer doing the right thing. So hopefully he'll be okay. Hey, let's go to these. We got these two other stories we're holding for Scott. So let's start running through these. We got a little less than 3 minutes before we take our next commercial break. And you know what? Popping over at Rumble, MVS has a question for Scott. Does Arrow Precision USA, do they have a 7.62 by 39 barrel?
I don't think so. I don't think we do. I know in the past, I think we've had, but I don't think we still have that.
No? All right. Well, there's your answer, MVS. So, well, guys, hey, going to the video, the next video, rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This is Butter at Rumble. Deputies ruled justified in a fatal shootout with a murder suspect who took a woman hostage.
Here you go, she's Shirley. Approaching Rocky Ridge Elementary and approaching 68th Avenue East.
I'm getting unit 70th Avenue on the north side for 6.
Just north of 70th, stationary, and now possibly moving northbound.
Coming up.
Shotsbury, 260th and 70th Avenue East, 14th.
Wow, there's a lot going on here. And the sheriff is Keith Swank. So according to the Pierce County Sheriff's Office, Dante Cudini, 37 years old, he's the main suspect in the killing of a woman in Spanaway. So he's a murder suspect. At 4:38 in the morning on March the 27th of 2024, so we're talking a year and a half ago, deputies responded to a call of a traffic accident. And arriving deputies, they find the driver, later identified as 47-year-old Teresa Latham, that she's been shot in the head before the collision. And at the time, police said they believed that the gunshot had come from the woods from nearby Spanaway Lake. Now, by July 2024, about a month later, investigators had developed information that identified Cudini as the shooter. July the 11th now, 2024, an officer safety bulletin was issued to law enforcement in Pierce County for Cudini, the suspect, identifying him as the suspect in this murder of Latham, the female. The bulletin alerted officers to use extreme caution, noted that this guy, Cudini, he's known to carry a pistol. He'd made statements about shooting police if they attempt to arrest him. And officers were told that he lived in a camper trailer in Spanaway, and he was known to drive a burgundy Chevy Suburban. So 3 days after the bulletin gets out, deputies see Cudini driving or leaving his property in the Suburban. Deputies give chase. He flees at a high rate of speed through Spanaway and through Graham, and video shows the pursuit, and it shows a deputy jump out of the way of Cudini's Suburban, which prosecutors say that he had aimed directly towards the deputy. The deputy fired 3 shots towards Cudini, who continued to flee from deputies. And then after several attempts to disable the fleeing Suburban, because that's a big ride, right? The car came to a stop in front of a home in a place called Graham. And so now we've got the video showing Coudini, our bad guy. He emerges from the Suburban with a gun, and he's got it to the woman's head, and he's demanding that the deputies back away from him. So I'm going to go ahead and slow this down. We're going to go to our third commercial break, and we're going to break this down when we come back. But, guys, you don't want to miss this. It's a wild story, and Scott's going to be able to break it down for us. We'll have a commercial break to do like that. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending the live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Affianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since way back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, the founder, Dan O'Kelly's got a deal for you. If you have your own agency, if you're a chief or sheriff, you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to GunLearn.com to get more information. Again, that is GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the Law Enforcement Talk Show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Travis Yates, retired Tulsa Police Major, and also Scott Steyert, our Green Beret Delta Force operative. And we left off talking about deputies ruling as justified a fatal shootout with a murder suspect who ended up taking a woman hostage. So we've got some interaction with the police, and our bad guy ends up fleeing, and he's in a big Suburban. He goes after one officer who has to jump out of the way. Officer fires three shots into the Suburban toward this bad guy named Coudini. After several attempts to disable the fleeing Suburban, it comes to a stop in front of a home in a place called Graham. The video shows Coudini, our bad guy, emerging from the Suburban. He's got a gun to a woman's head, demanding that deputies back away from him. And then he keeps the woman between himself and the deputies, and he's moving towards a garage. Now, it's a garage door that's partially open. He keeps the gun to her temple, and he holds it to her body and to her head directly, and he goes and tries to, well, he's making it over into the garage. Now, it's kind of hard to see the viewer watching different body cams and stuff, but he takes the woman actually into the open garage, at which point a deputy sees an opportunity to shoot him. And we have long guns there, too. We got cops with long guns, which is refreshing, right? And so they see an opportunity. They think they can take him out while they're hitting the woman. So the deputy takes the shot. He injures Coudini, our bad guy. And now he gives other deputies a chance to rush in and gives them an angle to shoot at the bad guy. So they direct the female to crawl out of the garage. She pretty much rolls out from underneath the garage. It's partially open. And then our bad guy is rolling to face the cops that are there. And he fired at deputies from the garage, and he's pulled out of the garage, pronounced deceased at the scene. And an 81-year-old woman was inside the home at the time, so it was not his home. She's taken the safety, and there was no connection noted between our bad guy and the house that he ended up, you know, running into the open garage with. So that's the way that goes down. Scott Steyert, this is your wheelhouse, buddy. The floor is yours.
Yeah, so first, kudos. They had long guns. That's a big deal. That's a really big deal, because that's going to, one, make it a lot more accurate to shoot. The only thing, you know, and I see this every single time. I wouldn't say every single time. I'd say 98% of the time, it seems like, whenever there's an officer involved shooting, it's how they array, it's how they move on the target. And you should never, it's like in the back of your head, sorry, you should be thinking, I don't ever want to set up behind another officer, right? Because here's the thing. Of course, I see that officer now. I mean, I see him. That's why I'm there, right? But the minute that I start to aim, let's say that why else would an officer be set up behind another officer and aiming? It's because he thinks that he might have a shot. Okay, so the minute that he takes that shot and he's aiming that gun, all his peripheral vision goes away. He can't see the guy next to him. I don't care if he's like right next to him. He won't see him. So to ever think that you can get behind somebody and engage in a firefight, and who's to say that officer gets a close round to the head? There's no telling what he's going to do. He almost just got shot. Okay. Now, granted, in one of the situations here, the officer set up, there's a car door probably keeping the officer from moving in front of his shot. But still, I don't like that. I don't like that at all. And if you're behind the officer, all the advantage in a firefight or even in a fight, anything, is to get separation, is to flank somehow. If I'm just, if I'm right behind another officer, where's my advantage? There is no advantage. I mean, I shouldn't be able to even shoot, but these guys are trying to shoot back here, but I'm not spreading out. I'm not making the enemy have to fight on two sides because I'm not spread out. So that was the first thing. And then when you come over here and you look over here at the, so that was, there was one officer in the street aiming right past the officer in front of him. I don't like that. And then the other officer that went over here, that was beside that telephone pole, same thing. This is even worse. The officer is behind him. He's on the ground taking a kneeling. He's kneeling behind a telephone pole. This officer is literally almost exactly over him. If that officer was to stand up after what I just said about aiming and not seeing, he's going to shoot himself in the head because he just stood up. Now, granted, you're supposed to look behind you before standing up. Why even do that? There's no advantage to having two guns behind each other. So, well, there's another big one. And then the officer that's in the kneeling position behind that pole, why not go into, you know, bracing up on that pole? Man, there's a technique to shoot in the kneeling. It is so extremely stable and accurate. I mean, I mean, you could take headshots at 100 if you do it correctly on something. I mean, with a little bit of practice, it's very, very stable. And the officer that's down behind that telephone pole, he's not taking advantage of that, you know, of bracing up on that pole. So those from my tactical, you know, the way my brain works, there's just a lot of tactical things here that, you know, with some better training, I think, you know, would solve that problem. But hey, it worked out, right? It worked out. Sometimes I think cops are some of the luckiest guys on the planet, man. But it worked out. Thank God. Hostage is okay and bad guy's dead.
Well, we got
overall success.
We got 4 minutes. I think we can squeeze this next one in. Rumble.com. This is Butter. El Centro police officers fatally shoot a suspect in a stolen car when he drives towards officers.
Marked police units moved and positioned themselves in the driveway with their red and blue light bar illuminated. At this point, the suspect accelerated the stolen vehicle and drove it towards officers. Two of the officers were in direct path of the fleeing vehicle. That is when the officer-involved shooting occurred. Here's the video from one of the body-worn cameras showing the encounter.
Back up, go the other way. No, just leave the car here, leave the car here. Get out, bro! Watch out! Back up, go the other way. No, just leave the car here.
So two stories back to back where we got a bad guy driving towards officers. So we're in California. El Centro Police Department released body cam footage of an officer involved a shooting where an underage person was shot and killed. October the 5th, 6:30 p.m. And El Centro Police Department received reports of a stolen car. When they get there, the agency says they found a stolen vehicle in a parking lot behind of a business. And officers are trying to talk to the people inside the car. Agency says that when the officer involved shooting happened, it was at that point. The driver was pronounced dead at the scene. They identified the driver killed as an underage person from Brawley. So let's go to my notes. If you watch, it starts off with a dash cam at 19 seconds. The units roll up. They block the exit of a parking lot for the stolen vehicle. And just seconds later, at 33 seconds, shots are fired at the underage driver as he accelerates towards officers on foot. And then we're going to switch from dash cam to body cam, and it shows shots being fired at 51 seconds, and then a second body cam at 112, but they do freeze frames at 120, and they do an animation, which was extremely beneficial at 138. Commentary on that, Scott, you got almost 3 minutes.
Well, actually, that wasn't the one that I wanted to do commentary on. I think that went down. But I think that was, yeah, I like the Seattle one. That was a good one because it's basically what I already said, but... Yeah, no, that I thought that was awesome. I mean, I thought the cops were spot on. I mean, he got out of the way. He took that shot. I mean, it looked pretty solid to me. I have really nothing bad to say about that. I mean, I thought it was a really good shot. Good shoot. You know, I mean, unless you see something that I don't see. I mean,
not a lot of training. You know, it's just, I really have felt over the last few years that we need more training shooting at and from Notice I said front moving vehicles, because now we've got cops that are blowing through windshields and side windows while they're freaking driving. I'm not saying that there's never an application for that, but it should be so rare, like you hardly ever see that, in my opinion. But just simply because the liability hat in the lack of training, we just have to really be training our officers. But if you have a policy against shooting at moving vehicles or occupied vehicles, or you cannot put a policy in place where you can restrict officers, like just like a chokehold. If you're in a lethal force situation, anything goes. I don't care if it's taking an ink pen out and jabbing it through the temple and killing the bad guy, or in his eye socket and popping the eye. It doesn't matter. You can't have a policy that says you can't do anything in all situations. It's simply, you cannot enforce that. So you've got to train your guys on how to shoot at or from moving vehicles that are occupied, because there are scenarios that I can envision happening where they're going to need that training, or else now you're on the hook for not giving it to them. And I suspect Travis agrees with me, but I don't know. We haven't talked about this before.
Yeah. No, I had a sergeant major, just to add to that. He goes, everybody here, right? You're in Delta. Everybody can shoot good. I want to see how well you can shoot a moving target. Most of the targets that I've shot, and everybody shoots, they're moving at some level, more, you know, most of them, from somewhere. So I think it's very important. It's just not easy to train. You got to have a range that has moving target. It's just, it's difficult to do. There's some drills that you can use on the range that are not moving targets that will help you do that. But it's just, it needs to be done. It needs to be done, but it's just not easy to do.
Yeah.
To train.
Travis Shades.
So on the video before that, was his name Houdini? Because if it was, he's not a very good job.
It was similar, but not Houdini. No, not Houdini. We got 15 seconds, Travis Yates.
Yeah. Any chief that is banning the shooting of anything and taking away that from officers, you can't work at that agency. You know, LAPD did that, and then the guy took his car and killed 10 people, I believe, in a school parking lot, and all of a sudden they had to change the policy back. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point. Disappointing. Well, guys, another fantastic show. Thank you so much to Dr. Travis Yates and Scott Steyer. We appreciate you guys being on the show. And guys, I used to take this opportunity to talk about the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3 that's helping cops out in a world of hurt that has suffered from things like PTSD and other issues. So please make sure that you guys check them out. And we also have, travisyates.org, courageouspoliceleader.com. Is there anything in there I'm leaving out, Travis?
No, it'll get you where you need to go.
All right. I appreciate it. And guys, please support our title sponsors that go to the great lengths to bring the show to you. Gulls.com, ComplianTechnologies.com. We have AeroPrecisionUSA.com, Scott's Company, GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. We love them. They're great on recruiting agencies in case you're hurting. TwoBells.com, they built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com, FisherOrlandoBass.com, and Tampa Free Press. FormerLawman.com, LawOfficer.com. We'll see you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.